You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's a holiday in the United Kingdom. It's a bank holiday there, so-called. And in the United States, it's Memorial Day, which sort of signifies the start of summer, I think. But anyway, the point is that it's pretty quiet and may get a bit quieter. Traditionally, it used to. I wonder whether it will now. Probably not with the way that things are going in the United States and the people in charge.
I think it will. I think people are tired. You know, I think they've had enough of Trump. And nothing will give them greater pleasure than just to go to wherever they have to go and kind of just turn off from his madness and whatever comes out of his mouth on a daily basis. You know, just totally unpredictable. Funny enough, I'm not phased out by it. I think that the markets are discounting the worst that he can bring about. And I think after a few months of volatility, we'll get back to picking up again. But I would imagine that people would like to turn off the TVs. You know, even talking to my wife, who's a avid listener of or viewer of the local channels, you know, Spectrum in New York and so on. Oh, yeah. She loves to find out what the local news are. They cover politics, but even she can't listen anymore. She just turns it off, says, I've had enough. And so I think that is the attitude. She's just visiting, a short visit, going up to Boston again. But I think people feel that way. They just can't, you know, dying to have a break from what has been a frantic couple of months.
Yes, and it stays frantic as well because of the gentleman you mentioned earlier on. I mean, he came out last week. He'd obviously had some bad feedback, or he'd had a bad dream, or somebody had said something to him about Europe, and he suddenly comes up with, okay, 50%. We'll put a 50% tariff.
All good.
Where'd you get the money? Where'd you get that figure from? Excuse me, that percentage figure of 50%. Where does it come from? And I saw a very interesting interview with a very well considered argument from this very demure gentleman. So he was calm and he was collected. And he said, I wonder if Mr. Trump realizes that there's a company in the Netherlands that has virtually got a monopoly on its particular product. The company's name is ASML. And every single American company that is in this field, i.e., you know, AI and super high tech, has to import their goods. So 50%, you're applying a 50% tariff on these goods that are essential, not just to America, but to the rest of the world. What is he doing? He's completely lost it again.
But that's, in fact, I think that's America's soft underbelly, because it's not, you know, we tend to forget that it's not only the physical goods, there's the services as well.
Yes.
And I mean, there's not one person in Europe that doesn't use Google or Microsoft or Apple or any of those. Mm. And we've already seen it. He's angered by the tariffs and their claims of anti-competitive behavior against these businesses. Well, they can up the ante as well. You know, they can start using that as a counterpunch them by doing that. You know, so, I wouldn't, you know, that's why he backtracks by Sunday evening. Oh, well, 25 and they've got till July, you know, and that's him. You know, he just backtracks all the time because he says these silly things without, as you say, you know, going into, the detail. ASML, you can't do it without, you can't make chips.
No.
You can't make NVIDIA without ASML.
Yeah, he said, well, from June the 1st, 50% tariff on all European goods, from a bottle of cheap wine from Italy to the whatever product ASML in Eindhoven produces. And then he says, and he wakes up yesterday morning and says, well, Melania, I think I'll make it July the 9th and we'll take it down a bit. So, and that's because Ursula von der Leyen phoned him up. And so he was sweet-talked by her, and then he thought, oh, no, forget it. And he probably doesn't remember what he's done now. He'll have to say to somebody, where are we now? What date and what tariff amount? It's actually very sad, and it's actually quite irritating as well.
No, I know. Does anybody know? I don't think there's anybody that really has a grasp of what tariffs are in existence or what tariffs are not.
Mm.
So that's why I'm saying I think that people are tiring of him, just want to get back to work. I think the markets have discounted the worst that he can do. You know, his big, beautiful bull.
Bill, yes.
I mean, anyway, whatever the consequences are, I think that most of it is already in the market. He watches that bond market, and I hope this is where it stops. In other words, that rates don't go higher. Because as rates go higher, the consequences for the whole world, Lindsay, because, you know, once American rates go, then it becomes attractive. Well, then you want to switch from Europe to some, you know, you start switching your bonds, and everybody's rates go up as well. But when I saw, and he's got the support of the Republican Party, who are so, what's the word with, you know, sycophantic. That's not the right word I'm looking for.
Yeah, it is. It is, because they're terrified of what might happen. There are people behind the scenes. I mean, the Peter Thiel type of group, enclave of people almost that sit down. They're planning it for Trump. There was a very interesting article, half of which I couldn't understand, from a chap from New York University. It's the monthly or weekly essay in the Financial Times. And right. It goes on about how they are creating a kingdom, and they are destroying democracy, right. And that is their goal, and they're actually doing it rather well without us knowing. They think that America is too big a democracy to completely dismantle, but they say it's a very dangerous situation, and Trump is being Trump is part of it. He's not that stupid when it comes to being a megalomaniac. But these people are pulling the strings. And I found it a bit disturbing again. I mean, everything now I find disturbing or distressing, David. No. And that's because it is. I've never known anything like this before.
No. But that's, you know, it's capturing every department in the United States. You know, every major government department is putting people in, you know, who are not really equipped to be in those positions. But that's why I'm saying I cannot understand how people in the Republican Party, that there's no one courageous enough to stand up against him and to see what's happening. You know, at the end, you're all responsible or guilty for what the consequences are. Look, you know, the problem is that on the other side, we have the Biden affair, where this is making the headlines as well, that he should never have been allowed. You know, the signs were there. Yes. Years ago of his memory deteriorating, his health deteriorating, and no one did anything. They hid it, you know, they covered it up. I mean, to the point of standing next to him as he walked in, just in case he stumbled or something like that. I mean,
or went off stage in the wrong direction, which he's done a couple of times. He wanders off towards the janitor's cupboard, whereas he should be going to the right where the drinks reception is.
But then you've got to have a whole remake of the Democratic Party. And what are they going to make it in? What kind of image are they going to make it on the far left? It's the far left that created the climate for Trump to be elected. So it's a real mess there. You know, no one's enthusiastic about the Democrats either. There's no one coming, there's no one standing up and putting his hand up that people want to support. So you've got an absolute, and yet things go on, you know. Jensen Huang makes Nvidia and the companies continue to produce good numbers. You know, the stock market's steady. There's kind of an underlying strength there that just seems to bumble along regardlessly.
We don't know what we're going to wake up to, but certainly when he goes quiet for a bit, there was just like this chap, this Australian fellow, was also being interviewed on CNN. He was a bit of a comedian. He said, "I've got a dog called Max, and Max is very enthusiastic, and he likes to go out. So he goes to the door and he barks a bit, and then I let him out, and he goes around, runs around the garden, chases a squirrel. We've got a resident squirrel in our garden. Chases the squirrel. The squirrel goes up the tree and sits there looking at him, and Max barks at him, and then he gets gets fed up with that, and he goes back, goes inside, has a drink of water, and has a little nap or a rest or something. And he says, and then an hour later, Max is up again barking it, but does the same thing. So it's just like Trump and the tariffs, you know. He's like Max, he has a rest, goes out, and then starts barking one more time.
That's so funny, yeah.
It was a very good analogy. But anyway, apart from that, David, a little bit on the South African front, never mind the Brits and the Yanks taking a day off. Mittal share price down 5.4% after its numbers. Barlow World doing nothing. And then there's Pick and Pay. I look at Pick and Pay and I think to myself, when I was an enthusiastic television presenter, based in Cape Town, they said, Lindsay, Pick and Pay's results coming up on Monday. I want you to get you out there to Kenilworth Racecourse, where their offices are next to there, and you go in this gate here and that gate, and this person will meet you, and you'll sit there, and you'll go and see the Ackermans, and then you'll see the CEO and everything. It doesn't seem as though it's like that anymore, dude. It's not a big deal anymore.
No. There are two companies you mentioned. There's Eltron, and then there's Pick and Pay.
Yes.
Both those companies were really superb businesses and dominated the industrial scene here, certainly in the 80s, with Bill Fenter and Eltron, or Eltec as it was called, and Pick and Pay with Raymond Ackerman, in a way from 70s, 80s, 90s. They were major industrial businesses, and both have fallen on hard time, but both have come down with quite a hump, although Eltron now is picking up. We'll go into it. But Pick and Pay, when you go through the numbers and you dissect the challenge ahead of Sean Summers, you wonder how a company got into a condition that they are in at the moment. You know, how the competition, whether it was ShopRite, Spar, Woolworths, and that just completely overwhelmed them. And I think led by, obviously, ShopRite, who was never really ever a threat to Pick and Pay. You know, they were incomparable. And now it's the opposite way, you know, the opposite way around. And when you go through the numbers, they were in serious trouble. And the only thing that was keeping them afloat was Boxer. You know, which you'll often hear, which is at the low end of the market, a very well-run business that has now been floated separately. And, you know, from the sale of Boxer to the public, they made money. They had a rights issue. They've lowered their debt. They're trying very hard. But where I'm getting at is that they're still in a lost position. And Sean Summers in the announcement today said they only see themselves breaking even in 2028.
He said that when he first took over the job, didn't he? He did say that this is a long job. And I think he said something like, it's not a five-year job. This is a 10-year project almost.
Well, he's extending it now. You know, that's why he's staying on. He signed a contract for another 3 years because that's how long it's going to take him.
Early 70s.
About 71, 71, 72, thereabouts. But he sees it as a long project to try and put it on a safe footing. Where it went wrong, how it was neglected, one can't say. And that's what happens to businesses. You know, you can't rest on your laurels. There's always someone coming up, someone smarter, someone better. And you need the right management. What went wrong? I don't, you know, was it the managers? Was it the family intervention? Who knows? You know, but all that happens is, and it's got a stinky name in the market, if I may say that. By stinky, I mean, you know, if you ask anybody, do you go to Pick and Pay? Pick and Pay. No one gets excited. You know, there might be a Pick and Pay down the road, which is a convenience store. But no one talks about it in the same light as in the new ShopRite offices or the new Checkers, you know, the upscale Checkers market or Checkers 6060 or things that the ShopRite group are doing and Woolworths as well when it comes to food. No one talks in the same light about Pick and Pay.
And the share price is around 28 rand a share. Where was it at one point in its pomp, in its heyday, when Pick and Pay was the dominant retailer?
I can't even tell you now because, I mean, it's had such a fall from grace and I have no idea where this has been going on for a number of years. But it set the tone for industrial markets. This was growing It used to trade at like a 25 multiple, in the same way as Capitec now dominates the financial markets or the banking markets. Pick and Pay was always considered the bluest of blue chips. You know, it was a kind of stock where people said, even up until a few years ago, said, you know, I've got these Pick and Pays. Do not sell my Pick and Pays. Hmm. You know, do not sell them. That kind of attitude that they adopted for IBM and other companies that have also gone south. And you know, they just lost their way.
It's a pity. And it's a very familiar South African story, I have to tell you, but we need not go into that and taint this podcast with negativity. You were saying.
I was saying on Eltron as well, which was run by Bill Fenter. And they were an enormously strong business as well. Bill Fenter dominated the if ever there was a banquet, you know, he was at the main table, together with Raymond Ackerman. I mean, they were seriously well-respected businessmen, and of course, then went down to the second generation. Things went the wrong way. It was in power transmission. It was in electronics. It was in cables. It was a very big business. Today, it then kind of lost its way. And what's interesting about it, where I'm getting to, is that new management has come in and is transforming it into a technology business, you know, health tech, fintech, which using technology in order to help businesses away from where they used to be in cables and kind of heavy engineering and so on. And this is a good result. And for a few years now, it's just picked itself up. It did unbundle Bytes, which was at a UK tech company, also a very good little business. But they nowhere near the market values of where they were relative to the JSE. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
As you say, this is common.
Yeah, it's quite sad. I think there's three listings due in 2025 on the JSE. Maybe we've had one already. I don't know, but I was looking in Currency, the publication, online publication, and said there was an article on the fate of the JSE looking forward. And there's, I think, three listings. But how many delistings? How many mergers? I can see that MAS or MAS, whatever it's called, and HiProp are getting together. So that's a consolidation in the property sector, David. So that means one of them won't be listed, presumably. So there's another one gone, presumably again.
It's not the stock exchange fault.
No.
There is no economy. You know, the economy's dead. We've been growing at – we had this after COVID, of course, we kicked up because – we were in a recession, 2020, picked up in 2021, if that's the right way, or one of the years. Subsequent to that, we're growing at 1.5%, and likely for the next 3 years at that kind of level, simply because the unemployment levels are untenable. There are so many people on social grants that whatever money we do make from this soft economy goes to feeding those people who haven't got jobs. So you never get out of the trap. And you've got massive debt that you're paying, huge amount of debt on which you're paying high interest. So all of that's eating to whatever money you make. So this is, when you can't blame the stock exchange. You know, it's the economy. The economy will generate businesses that maybe want to go to the market. So, yeah. I can't make a living from the JSE.
and you don't, David. Otherwise, we've got a RAND that's it's still nice and strong, 1787. Maybe it's looking forward and hoping that the dollar will continue to weaken and therefore it can maintain its strength and stability. And maybe it's hoping that the platinum group metals will continue their sort of mini resurgence, and then the exchequer will be boosted by the profits and the revenues from the PGM producers. I don't know, but that was the last
long
time
way
we.
To go.
Yeah, no, a long way to go. I always think of Wayne. I always think of Wayne McCurry, when our friend who is recently retired. When I think of PGMs, and I'm sure he looks at the screen occasionally. Do you ever speak to him?
Yeah, we're going to see him on Friday.
Oh, good.
Got a reunion lunch. Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah, we'll give him my regards. Football's over now, David.
What a floppy weekend. You know what the best match? I loved it. Was that Sunderland are coming up?
God, you know, I find that I really felt sorry for Sheffield United. Just with the background here, it's a £200 million match. It's the richest match in the world. Because the people that win it in the playoff final at Wembley get to go into the Premiership. And even if they're crap and they come down the next season, they still bag £200 million over the season through TV rights and endorsements and that sort of thing. So it's a big deal. They were 14 points adrift of Sheffield United in the league. Sheffield United came third, and they think, we should have been promoted. The first two were promoted. Yeah. Why isn't the third promoted if three teams go up? Sunderland were rubbish. They're like a kickabout team. And they come along.
You saw them yesterday. They were rubbish.
They were terrible.
The quality was awful. Yes. The quality was shocking. You know, and you look, you say, you're going to go on and now play a Liverpool or something. When you looked at your team, Ipswich,
rubbish.
I mean, playing, they weren't, you know what? They just missed. I think they were naive when they came up, but they played really good football at times.
Sometimes, but no defense. But anyway, that's another story. But I felt sorry. They did the same to Coventry, Sunderland, that is, in the semi final, last minute winner. And they did it again. Poor Sheffield.
I know, but you know, when you think of Sunderland's story, remember how they went down and into third division and then have kind of come back. Mm. I've always had a, because these are rivals of Newcastle and Sunderland and Newcastle, very big rivals. So I love to see that game.
Remember the Tyne and Wear derby, yes. That'll be good fun, yeah.
Sheffield United always used to beat Arsenal, so I have a... whenever it was important, Arsenal would always lose to Sheffield United. So I still have that resistance against them doing anything here.
I saw your mate Gary Mabbott being interviewed, and I thought of you, and he's all excited about Spurs and everything. And then they lose at home 4-1. They're terrible, David.
Can you believe it?
They are rubbish.
They lost 22 games, I think, something like that. 22 games.
And they're in the Champions League.
And the fans are going mad. You know, like that they won this cup.
Okay.
22 right. games they lost.
The one story, I mean, I don't want to go on too much about football, but the markets are boring. So I just, one more thing is that there will be a story coming out, I think, over the next few months. Someone's going to write a book about it, and that's Manchester United, because what has gone on there? The stadium is falling apart, so they're building a new one. Okay, that's fine. It'll be the powerhouse, the football stadium of Europe. It'll be the biggest capacity, this and that and everything, which is great. But Old Trafford should never have been allowed to fall to bits like it has. But also there's something going on there, and I think it's referenced by the fact that Scott McTominay, who is an angry young Scottish man playing at United in 1 week, out the next, constantly getting booked, and you know, he could see from his demeanour that he wasn't happy, goes to Napoli, wins the league, becomes a captain, scores 14 goals, 2 assists, is made the captain, scored one of the two goals, and he is now a folk hero in Naples, and he looks a completely different player. In the piece that I've written for The Guardian, whether it's published or not, I don't know, it's like a melding of Roy Keane and Rodri together. He's got the fire of Roy Keane and the silky smoothness of Rodri, and it's amazing. But it tells you that along with Anthony, you know, the Dutchman that Ten Hag brought in for a vast amount of money from Ajax, he went to Real Betis in Spain, a little team, and he does really well because he's away from United. Scott McTominay, same thing, leaves United, does well. Something is really rotten at United, I reckon, David. Rotten to the core.
I don't know what it is. No. But that they, when you see them playing, you know, even against Spurs, it was an incredibly awful game. And, you know, once more, I think they won yesterday, but it's only because they were playing against 10 men. Mm. And the comments that I was listening to Michael Owen, he says, no, he should have got a yellow card. Because Martinez should have only got a yellow card because What's his name? Hoyland would never have scored, you know. even if he had the ball without a goalkeeper, he wouldn't have scored. You know, he would have messed it up.
They have been terrible. Yeah. And the Guardian reporters after that finally spoke of against Spurs. They said it was a very, very difficult game for watch for us. It was difficult as a seasoned professional journalist to watch this game. It was so appalling. Anyway, David, we have ended
we've
on
got
a negative.
We've got the what's-her-name on Saturday night. And I told people, just I'm not going anywhere, which is PSG.
PSG against Inter.
They both, because they're both attacking. I like, you know, I like the brand that they play, especially for an Italian team.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yes,
at least that's it. That's the end of the season.
So Shapiro's in on Saturday, right? I should remember that. I shall pester you with messages. Okay, David, thank you very much for your time. As always, David Shapiro is from Sassman Securities in Johannesburg, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors, and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.